Chapter 137. That he accompanied every movement of my mind, in his coldly easy way with all of them, and with me, and with the whole subject, I saw it clearly. In his light protestations of admiration of my future husband, in his enthusiasm regarding our engagement and our prospects, in his hopeful congratulations on our future wealth, and his despondent references to his own poverty, all equally hollow, unjesting, and full of mockery, I saw it clearly. He made me feel more and more resentful, and more contemptible, by always presenting to me everything that surrounded me with some new hateful light upon it, while he pretended to exhibit it in its best aspect for my admiration and his own. He was like the dressed-up Death in the Dutch series. Whatever figure he took upon his arm, whether it was youth or age, beauty or ugliness, whether he danced with it, sang with it, played with it, or prayed with it, he made it ghastly. You will understand, then, that when your dear friend complimented me, he really condoled with me, that when he soothed me under my vexations, he laid bare every smarting wound I had, that when he declared my faithful swain to be the most loving young fellow in the world, with the tenderest heart that ever beat, he touched my old misgiving, that I was made ridiculous. These were not great services, you may say. They were acceptable to me, because they echoed my own mind, and confirmed my own knowledge. I soon began to like the society of your dear friend better than any other. When I perceived, which I did, almost as soon, that jealousy was growing out of this, I liked this society still better. Had I not been subject to jealousy, and were the endurances to be all mine? No. Let him know what it was. I was delighted that he should know it. I was delighted that he should feel keenly, and I hoped he did. More than that, he was tame in comparison with Mr. Gowan, who knew how to address me on equal terms, and how to anatomize the wretched people around us. This went on until the aunt, my mistress, took it upon herself to speak to me. It was scarcely worth alluding to. She knew I meant nothing. But she suggested from herself, knowing it was only necessary to suggest, that it might be better if I were a little less companionable with Mr. Gowan. I asked her how she could answer for what I meant. She could always answer, she replied, for my meaning nothing wrong. I thanked her, but said I would prefer to answer for myself and to myself. Her other servants would probably be grateful for good characters, but I wanted none. Other conversation followed, and induced me to ask her how she knew that it was only necessary for her to make a suggestion to me, to have it obeyed? Did she presume on my birth, or on my hire? I was not bought, body and soul. She seemed to think that her distinguished nephew had gone into a slave market and purchased a wife. It would probably have come, sooner or later, to the end to which it did come, but she brought it to its issue at once. She told me, with assumed commiseration, that I had an unhappy temper. On this repetition of the old wicked injury, I withheld no longer, but exposed to her all I had known of her, and seen in her, and all I had undergone within myself, since I had occupied the despicable position of being engaged to her nephew. I told her that Mr. Gowan was the only relief I had had in my degradation, that I had borne it too long, and that I shook it off too late, but that I would see none of them more. And I never did. Your dear friend followed me to my retreat, and was very droll on the severance of the connection, though he was sorry to, for the excellent people in their way the best he had ever met, and deplored the necessity of breaking mere houseflies on the wheel. He protested before long, and far more truly than I then supposed, that he was not worth acceptance by a woman of such endowments, and such power of character. But well, well. Your dear friend amused me, and amused himself, as long as it suited his inclinations, and then reminded me that we were both people of the world, that we both understood mankind, that we both knew there was no such thing as romance, that we were both prepared for going different ways, who seek our fortunes like people of sense, and that we both foresaw that whenever we encountered one another again we should meet as the best friends on earth. So he said, and I did not contradict him. It was not very long before I found that he was courting his present wife, and that she had been taken away to be out of his reach. I hated her then, quite as much as I hate her now, and naturally, therefore, could desire nothing better than that she should marry him. But I was restlessly curious to look at her, so curious that I felt it to be one of the few sources of entertainment left to me. I traveled a little. Traveled until I found myself in her society, and in yours. Your dear friend, I think, was not known to you then, and had not given you any of those signal marks of his friendship which he has bestowed upon you. In that company I found a girl, in various circumstances of whose position there was a singular likeness to my own, and in whose character I was interested, and pleased to see much of the rising against swollen patronage and selfishness, calling themselves kindness, protection, benevolence, and other fine names, which I have described as inherent in my nature. I often heard it said too, that she had an unhappy temper. Apostrophe well understanding what was meant by the convenient phrase, and wanting a companion with a knowledge of what I knew, I thought I would try to release the girl from her bondage and sense of injustice. I have no occasion to relate that I succeeded. We have been together ever since, sharing my small means. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.